Like, why does this happen? And like, okay, if the best players in the world, even if their swings look really different, they have these commonalities. Like, that like made sense to me. Like, I didn't realize how good I wasn't until I started playing, but.
What do you mean realize how good you were?
Like, I had a good career and won a bunch at Mankato.
And you're like, this is easy.
Division two, which is, it was good, but then you play mini tour events and you're like, you need to shoot in the 60s.
Yeah.
A lot. I think it's that not being afraid to miss, because if you played really terrible, you have nothing to lose, but you still want to shoot a good score, so you're just going to like pick your target and swing at it.
There is a podcast brewing that's about to take over podcasting for good. The only podcast that you are going to need to tune into day in, day out, is the Member Guest Podcast.
If I can hit it down the middle of the fairway, that's great, but again, with the driver right now, the driver sucks.
John Daly, and you're listening to the Member Guest Podcast. Rip it, rip it.
Why are you laughing at my intro?
It's a good intro. Driver sucks.
Can you name everybody in it? I haven't done this in a while. Early on, I would ask people how many, you know, people they can name in the intro, because there's four. Do you know all of them?
I feel like it's one of those guys was, see, like the like funny YouTube clips about.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know.
Bob Does Sports.
Okay.
Robbie Berger.
Got it.
He's the first one. He's the intro. You know the other three?
Well, John Daly.
Yeah. That one's pretty easy because he says his name. So
true. That's true.
Then you got two more.
I have no idea.
Come on. You know, the driver sucks.
Who's driver sucks?
That's Bryson. That's back when he was talking about his, I think, the Cobra driver.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Got
me
for that.
Yeah. Then the last one's Bruce Buffer. A lot of people look at Bruce Buffer, but I'm a UFC guy, so.
Oh.
And yeah. He did the intro at my wedding back in October.
Really?
Well, yeah, he does like cameos, and one of his things is like he'll do people's like weddings and announcements or like baby announcements.
Yeah.
So I paid him to do our wedding intro, like when we walked into everybody. So
he like pre-recorded it and.
Oh yeah, there's like a video and the whole thing.
That's hilarious.
He records it. You can like directionally tell him, you know, what you want. So like we give him our names and all this stuff, and I told him to do it just like he would a fight. So we gave him like the venue name, the city and state that we were. He's like, live from Scottsdale, Arizona. Like,
yeah. That's pretty epic. If anyone knew UFC, they had to have.
Well, I got a bunch of buddies that love UFC and gamble on it and stuff. And there are a few people that went a little crazy. It was sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a fun time. So
cool.
If you ever get to that stage in life, just hit up Bruce Buffer and give you a great intro for your wedding.
Yeah. Perfect.
Yeah. All right. Introduce yourself, Mr. Ross Miller from Optimal Performance Golf, right?
Yeah.
I get that right.
My name's
Ross Miller PGA.
Ross Miller PGA. Yeah. I do golf instruction now. I played professionally for 10 years.
Wow.
Which is actually, I think about that now and it's like,
that's a decade.
A decade. Yeah.
It's a long time, man.
Almost a third of my life. Yeah.
Yeah. How old are you now?
33.
Yeah. So you're my age. I'm 34. Yeah. You did it for 10 years.
Yeah.
It's a good run, man. Do you officially hang up playing professionally?
Yeah. Like maybe one or two like events that are cool, but right now I'm kind of on a.
Maybe try Monday into 3M or something.
Maybe.
I don't know, get rid of it.
Huh?
I think Andrew said they got rid of Mondays.
They either got rid of Mondays or it's like, did they get rid of
PGA
Tour Mondays? They might have got rid of PGA Tour Mondays.
Yeah, that sounds right.
So.
Sad.
So that is a bummer, actually.
It is.
Yeah.
We were talking about it. It's like one of the great things in golf, or was a great thing in golf.
It's super cool. I mean, the reality is most guys that Monday in like end up missing the cut, but every once in a while, like something pretty epic happens.
Or I think he gave the example of like the last guy to Monday in and win was somebody like Corey Connors or, you know, somebody that's like already won on tour.
Well, Cameron Young, like he Mondayed into Korn Ferry events and like just never looked back. He didn't get to where he's at from Q school.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
He Mondayed into Korn Ferry stuff and just started
like
playing really well.
Top 10.
Oh, shit.
Hung around, win, gone.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. I assumed I thought he was kind of like a big deal, but maybe not. I thought he was one of the college kids.
He was, but he missed at Q school. And then he ended up doing what he does.
Yeah.
So
yeah. Playing in Ryder Cups and
yeah, he's all right.
Yeah. He's pretty sick.
Yeah.
Yeah. the band that Sleepy Hollow built. So 10 years, played professionally. Now you're just doing full-time instruction at Optimal?
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is in, it's not Blaine.
Maple Grove.
Maple Grove.
It's in Maple Grove. Maple Grove, Osseo.
Yeah.
It's been a nice change.
Yeah.
10 years on the road, like, I was like from 22 years old to 31, 32, like, snowbird.
Yeah.
It's like so weird.
It's a grind. What did it look like specifically for you? Because everybody's like pro journey is different. Like if you do it 10 years, obviously, like, you know, when Andrew was here, we talked about this a little bit. He's like, you either got the guys that like will try for, you know, 1 or 2 years and they're just like,
right,
you know, I just want to say I tried this and like maybe, you know, I strike lightning in a bottle. And there's the guys like you that like are able to do it and do it for an extended period of time. But I don't know if people truly understand like the grind that it is. Like just looking like what Siegel's doing right now and what his travel schedule and stuff looks like. Like for you, were you living here the entire time and then traveling around, or what was it like?
So I got done with school and I had become really good buddies with Clayton Rask. He was like my golf mentor. And he was moving down to Atlanta, which was warmer, but like the winters aren't great there, but you can play.
Yeah.
And I was talking to him, like, what do I do? Because my college career was good.
Mankato?
Yep.
I did some research.
It was pretty good, and I wanted to keep playing. And then I didn't know what to do, so he had me come winter down there, and then I had to come back up here for the summer and travel out of here. I didn't realize how good I wasn't until I started playing, but...
What do you mean realize how good you were?
Like, hurt? I had a good career and won a bunch at Mankato.
And you're like, this is easy.
Division two, which is, it was good. But then you play mini tour events and you're like, you need to shoot in the 60s.
Yeah.
A lot. And
just to like right. play.
Like one thing I tell people is in college, like par is good. If you shoot in the red, it's great. But you can like at least at Division II level for sure.
Even today, or is that starting to change a little bit?
I haven't like kept up with what college scores look like, but I still imagine if your final tournament score is just like dipping in the red, you're not going to do bad.
Sure,
you might not win a lot.
Yeah,
but like you're going to be
you're a solid player.
You're gonna like your ranking is going to be okay.
Yeah,
I would imagine. So. That was me, kind of. I had my senior year, I got hot. And then, so anyways, I went down with Clayton. I was practicing with him. And then I'd come up here and caddy at Interlochen, then go play Dakota's tour events and, like, miss cuts by one. And like, rinse repeat for almost 2 years. And then I was either kind of realized something has to change or I need to do something else.
But yeah.
Like, I was so in my head, I was like, if I am getting better, why would I stop?
Yeah. Makes sense.
Yeah. Kind of. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It depends on what level you're getting better. But yeah. I mean, generally speaking, it makes sense. Like, all right, I'm not like reverting here. Like I'm continuing to progress.
Yeah.
Like anything.
And I had a lot of help with instruction up here I would say Steve Fessler, Luke Benoit, and Eric Chiles. Chile. Okay.
Yeah.
And then they helped me a ton. I'm super grateful. But then things kind of changed when I started working with a different guy down in Georgia. Just like we changed the mechanics a lot.
Yeah.
Which actually, like, I learned so much about like technique and how the body's supposed to work in the swing that I use that a lot today.
Yeah. When you're instructing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What do you attribute it to? Because I always find it fascinating having these combos about teaching instruction and how like everybody learns a little bit different, right? Like yeah. as an instructor, it's, you know, sometimes like there's probably certain people that come to you that like are a good fit for how you teach and how they learn. And then there's probably the inverse, right? And like sometimes you just don't match well with how somebody like instructs or like something just doesn't click. So like twofold, what was it for you working with that guy? Like what kind of clicked? And then for you, when you're bringing that and working with people, how do you kind of manage that as a teaching instructor?
It's a great question. So for me, I think I started to learn why. Like, why does this happen? And like, okay, if the best players in the world, even if their swings look really different, they have these commonalities. Like that, like, made sense to me. Like, okay, like, there's certain things that are, I don't want to say non-negotiable, but like, everyone's doing this. That's really good. Yeah. And so for me, understanding why, and then learning like how to practice. So for me, that was like slowing down and doing a bunch of drills and like exaggerating the movements.
Sure.
And then feedback. So I never was like a huge, like, oh, I video my swing all the time and look at it. And then, but I think I didn't know what I was looking for. Like I understood face and path and some different things, like how the like ball flight laws, like I understand it. But at that point, then understanding like, okay, what am I even looking for on video? And like, why does it even matter? And so that's what changed for me a lot.
Yeah. And then like, I guess once you start to get to that level, and I've seen Benoit a few times. I think he's I like a lot of the stuff that he talks about with the slow, exaggerated movements and like the mind body connection and like that type of practice, which my old practice used to just be
rapid fire
and bang balls like till you can hit it straight. Yeah. And like you'll kind of figure it out.
Yeah.
Like when you're coaching people, what are the things that like, what are those pro commonalities, like the people that do it really good, like what are the commonalities that, you know, most people would understand? Okay, like, yeah, that generally makes sense. It doesn't really matter. I think I saw a video actually speaking of Benoit the other day where he said, like, I don't focus on the backswing as much, like, right away, because, like, you know, you got the Matt Wolf guys and Furyk who, like, whatever, but, like, everybody gets to, like, here and then, you know, rotate. So, like, it doesn't really matter how you get to here, but you have to get to here and, like, what works, you know, for you to do that. What are the commonalities that you see?
For me, like, with high handicaps is they love to get up to the top and turn without any like what I've really learned is like the pros, best players, like whether they know it, feel it or not, they do actually like swing their arms.
Interesting. So dive into that a little bit more.
So most people, if you get your hands to the top and you just turn, that's your like over the top slicer.
Sure. Yep.
And so the biggest commonality is like guys learn to like shift and
their arms come down
and then they're turning.
It's almost like that famous Sergio clip where he talks about like pulling the lawnmower, like he gets to the top and he's like down.
Or like if you've seen like Justin Rose doing the rehearsal like a million times, like that's pretty good. And then with like the second part of your question, teaching, the first lesson you're kind of trying to figure out like how does this person operate.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes the first lesson may not be as smooth right away until you kind of like figure out the path or like the communication style. Some people don't actually want to know why. They just want to know what to do. And then some people are like, they can't understand why I'm having to do it until I like break it down.
Yeah. That's so. Me. Like I break things apart and I need to section by section, figure out like what does what. So that in my head, it's like I'm connecting to, I guess you would call me less of a feel player. There's some people out there that are just like, they can feel it, or like, you know, you tell them to do something, they do it, it produces a good outcome, and they just immediately like felt what they changed. And it's like, oh, I can just do that, and now it's going to be good.
Right. And for me, I don't know. If people, they're just all different. Everybody's different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so you go down to Atlanta, see this guy, like, what clicked or what changed? It sounded like with like mechanic swing, and then you were like, all right, now like I'm back. Like, I'm back now. I get to go do, you know, well, what did you start doing after that?
It's funny because he gave me an understanding of where I needed to go with it. And it was a lot of like how I like use my body. But then this is where I think a lot of students get off. They want like instant gratification. Yeah. So I took I worked with him a couple times, and then I actually went down to Florida for a few months. And I did drills, like two different drills, like every day religiously. And I'd still hit balls just normal, but I'd like save like half of like two buckets, one for drills and one I'd hit. And I did this for 3 months, and then it was so different, like the compression and control of my ball flight. And then after that, that's when I started like consistently cashing checks and like seeing like real progress.
Were you tracking what changed from like a strokes gained perspective, or do you have a very, are you in tune with the actual things that changed on the course from like, oh, I'm hitting it closer, I'm controlling my irons, like driver was always good, it was more ball striking. Oh wow, this translated into chipping and I'm chipping it better. Like what were the tangible things that, like, if someone looked at Ross Miller 2 years ago and then Ross Miller now, like what would jump out on the stat sheet as to what changed?
It's probably iron game.
Like ball striking and approach.
That's interesting though, because I was like in college, I was in like the top 10 for par three scoring. And I don't, so like I kind of hit irons okay, but I don't know. Something changed when I first turned pro where I was like trying to swing. I think I was trying to swing like Clayton and it didn't work. Like I kind of got worse, but I was still like kind of good at getting the ball in the hole, even though it was ugly. And then I tried the stats and I could never be consistent with it. I think it would be like a mind thing where I would like overlook into it. And then eventually it became more of a fluid thing where like I would reflect on a tournament and be like, what hurt me? What was good? And then as I got better, you kind of learn to like lean on your strengths. So like if there's a hole, I don't care if like in theory it should be a driver hole or whatever, but I'm like, I like three wood here. I feel comfortable with three wood.
And yeah.
Like, kind of owning your own game and playing like to your strengths.
Sure. Yeah, it makes sense. Yeah. Were you a decade guy or are you a decade guy? Do you track your stuff or was it more just like back of the napkin?
Yeah. I never like did decade. I learned like the basics of it. Like this makes sense. Like if it's wider at 260 than it is at 300, like maybe don't hit driver.
Sure.
Like it doesn't seem like rocket science to me.
Yeah.
And then I thought the approach shot stuff was really good. I didn't like carry it with me, but I kind of had a pretty good understanding of, I think I studied it for a little bit and I sort of knew like seven iron is about this, whatever.
Yeah. It more so has opened my eyes to what's good and what's not, I guess.
Yeah.
I think far too often amateurs will assume like, oh, I got a seven iron in my hands. You know, I should hit it to, you know, this close, or I should hit the green this many times. And it's just like, it's more expectation management of like, oh, it's less about if I hit this really close and more about like where I miss it. And then am I in a good spot to then get myself, you know, up and down or like make a par, like with, you know, taking into effect everything and, wind distance, like all that stuff, just generally speaking, like trying to have a better frame of mind about like what is acceptable for your skill level.
It's back to instruction. Like I have a few young, like high school kids that are like really talented, I'd say.
Mm-hmm.
And I always wonder, I'm like, you stripe it in here. Like, how are we not shooting in the 60s? But I'm not out there with you on the course.
Yeah.
Like, I know you say like you have good management, but sometimes I wonder, like, I think we need to talk about this more.
Yeah. Will and I have had that combo and I think it's twofold. I mean, obviously like the really easy things that you could say is like when you're in a simulator, you're always lined up completely perfect, right? Mm-hmm. Like you're literally lined up to your target, absolutely perfect every time. And then like I would get outside with Will, and he would be like, dude, you're aimed 20 yards right of where you think you're aimed. And like, we worked on that for a long time last year. Like that was just like one thing. And then, the second is obviously the mental part of it of like, you know, when you're just in a simulator, like it doesn't
matter.
Yeah. There's no consequence whatsoever. Like, it's just like swing free. Like he went to a driver fitting the other day and I was just absolutely, I was like, I am the best driver of the golf ball in the world. Like, and you get outside and all of a sudden, like you got to carry it 280 and there's trouble left and you're trying to figure out where the wind is at. And all of a sudden you go, man, do I even hit driver here? Like now you're second guessing and then, you know, shit happens. Yeah. And so it is just, that is always an interesting dynamic of like, you know, there's one thing inside when you're taking lessons and doing it. And there's a whole other thing. Like when you bring your coach or instructor outside and they just like watch you play nine holes and just like observe what happens. Cause you know, for guys like you that played at that level for so long, there's so many things that are, you know, second nature, like, and you've played in competitive tournaments and all this stuff. And then you get amateurs or high school kids that they just haven't learned those things. And there's still a bunch of stuff that I haven't learned. Mm-hmm. And that's why I love playing with, you know, McCain and others that are so good and just like picking their brain on, dude, like, what are you thinking there? Or what were you doing? Like, I noticed you had the ball like way up in your stance. Like, oh yeah, I was trying to, you know, like get a 7-iron there instead of like knock down a 6 or whatever. I'm like, oh, duh. Like, it makes sense.
Yeah.
Now when I see it, but I never would have thought of that. So it's that's my take.
That's probably like going back, like the physical game got better, but like how you think through and manage your like strategic thought process, but also your emotional thought process is like probably where like I gained a bunch in my performance.
Would you attribute it to a not caring, but I've noticed for me and a lot of people will say who I've talked to that, you know, have had success, call it at my level, amateur, like
you're good amateur golf. Like in the big scheme of things, you're a really good golfer.
Yeah. But I'm also, aware of my weaknesses, which are like competitive golf. Cause I really get in my head and I have this, I've prepared so hard. Like this is when I need to play my best golf. Like this is really all that matters. As opposed to this is just another round, like treat it like you do every other round. Cause at the end of the day, who gives a shit what you shoot in like the, you know, the banam, like other than you. Right. And so like unpacking that mentally, I hear a lot of people say like, you just have to play like, not that you don't care, but like that you don't care. Like it's just another round. And the bad days, you got to figure out how to make good. And the good days, you got to figure out how to like be great and take advantage of it. For you, like what is that, like you talk about that good kind of mental frame of reference, how would you describe it to people? Is it that, is it the not caring as much, or
it's not as much not caring as much as it is like following a process, meaning like, okay, figure out what you think the yardage is playing, wind, whatever, and like actually picking a target and like trying to hit that shot to the target. So like easier said than done, but to think about like, okay, this is like a little something off a 7-iron. The pin is left. I have this, like, it could be a tree branch, a limb, whatever, rake in the back of the green. I'm aiming at that and trying to hit the shot. There's some days where you're really good at that. And some days where I just can't get the water left out of your head. Like that's, you're human.
Yeah.
But the better you get at that, I think that, I've never been like, oh, I don't care, and then played well. But when I've played well, I've been really, really focused on what I'm doing. I'd be nervous all the time, but like so locked in on like the pre-shot routine and target and process and what.
Yeah. I guess it's, I wouldn't say not caring. I need to find a new way to describe that. But
some people are like that though.
Well, it's almost like, I think most people would understand the theory of, you know, certain guys like, you know, Rory kind of had this for a little bit where like when he would win, it was because he was chasing, not being chased, and he could almost play more free. It's like, okay, Rory's a couple back and like, here he comes, because like it's Sunday. He's not expected, quote unquote, to win. Like he doesn't have a 4-shot lead like he did this last year at Augusta and, you know, almost blew it type of thing. And actually his interview about that shot on, was that 12 or 13, is phenomenal. If you haven't seen it, like go listen to him break it down. But just, you know, people kind of understand that, like, you know, I have a bad front nine. Now I like have thrown away this whole, what am I going to shoot that day? And they go shoot a really good back nine. Right. And that's kind of the mentality that I'm trying to unlock for a full 18 or just like for a full round.
Yeah. I think it's that not being afraid to miss. Cause if you played really terrible, you have nothing to lose, but you still want to shoot a good score. So you're just going to like pick your target and swing at it.
Yeah. And to your point, it's like not being afraid to miss to the smart target, not just like firing at pins all the time, like making the smart decision, then being, I think Tiger talks about this, like being committed to your actual target that you're trying to hit it at.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to take that into this year.
Do it.
Yeah. That's what I'm going to do. Speaking of committing to target. So the hot topic online has been right now for the better part of a week, like working the ball both ways or not. Fawcett, obviously the founder of Decade, and then Benoit was kind of in there as well talking about how, you know, Scott's very like play one shot shape off the tee. And then maybe with irons, you know, because you can affect ball position a little bit more. Mm-hmm. You can if you like really, really need to. But, you know, he talks about how pros and guys like need to just like stick to one shot shape. And that's what they do. And, you know, pretty much most of the tour guys play a cut like off the tee almost always if they can, because they can control it more. And I'm curious if somebody that's like played, you know, because I look at a guy like Scottie Scheffler and I feel like you, when you watch these guys shot shape, like they can do anything that they want, but like are elite level players out there and thinking that on every shot, or are they always trying to play their stock shot as much as they can unless they have to do something else? So the question is like, yeah, one shot shape, both shot, like what is it?
I think I'm like a combo. Like I understand.
You can't be a combo.
I think I'm a combo. So like I saw the Instagram thread. Yeah. And I think like with like I agree with Benoit that like you are gonna miss both ways. And then I understand. Here's what I'll say. I played the best golf of my life, like almost exclusively hitting a cut. And I think there's just going to be some rounds or holes where that just fits in better. You're still going to miss. If you're a cutter, you're either going to overcut it or miss it in the left rough or hit it down the middle. Like there's three options. But I think it makes sense to like try to master. What's the saying? Like master of none.
Is that the one that you're talking about?
Yeah. You know, I'm talking like,
I'll find it. something is a master of none.
Kicking impossible. So to me, like if you're mentally, if you know your ball is going to like tend to fall one way or the other, I find it easier to aim. I actually hated when I played if I got too neutral.
Jack of all trades, master of none.
Bingo.
Yeah.
So I don't believe in like, you're never going to like take one side of the golf course out of play. But I think as a player, I didn't like not knowing where my tendency was to miss.
Yeah.
You might like double cross one and like not be happy. Like that's going to happen. But if the pin is in the middle of the green, or and you have like a, once you get to like mid iron or so, I need to know where to aim.
Yeah.
And so like just aiming straight.
And are you aiming where you want the ball to finish? So let's just hypothetically speaking, step up to hole 10 with me at Windsong, right? Uh-huh. Let's say it's back right pin.
Yeah.
And we're all the way back, so you've got like a 5-iron. Like for me, I'm just trying to hit like the center of the green, so I'm like putting uphill to the back right. Like I'm not trying to get super aggressive, but like let's just say I'm trying to aim dead center of the green, which would be, you know, probably like that left bunker, like the end of it is kind of like right in the, you know, right in the center, but pretty close. Like if I'm trying to aim to the center of the green, and I'm picking my shot, which like, you know, for you and you're playing your best was a let's just say it was a 5-yard cut.
Yeah.
So, you know, are you aiming 15 feet left of the center of the green, or are you aiming at the center of the green and hitting your shot?
I would line up to where I wanted the ball to finish.
So you would aim 15 feet left of the center of the green. Because then because now like if you go left, like, yeah, you're
a long ways away.
You're off the green and you're a long ways away.
Yeah. But in theory, that's the miss.
Yeah. Cause that's where you got the most green to work with chipping.
I think like any golfers, well, you're kind of lying. If you're just playing, it's really hard not to right pin. Like maybe you're trying to hit middle of the green, but like if anything, you might let it fade over there.
That's what I'm saying. So that's where in my mind I go, okay, well, do I aim at the center of the green? Because then my like 5-yard cut, like if it does that, what I'm trying to do and my tendency is, it's going to be really, really good. Mm-hmm. Right? Like it's going to fall, like start at the center, fall a little right and like get back there.
But that's probably the trap. Like if you're actually in control of like your mental game and your thought process, like you are legitimately trying to hit it in the center of the green. You're not like, well, maybe I'll accidentally hit it.
So you're trying to aim the 15 feet left. Yeah. And,
yeah, I would say that.
Okay.
If I was playing well.
Yeah, there's so many nuances to it, right? Which I think goes back to like Scott's point, which is like there, you know, just stick with, you know, the one shot shape and like you're going to be okay on 14, 15, 16 holes of your round. And like, if you really need to do something one time, like, yeah, go ahead. And like to Benoit's point, like you look at Tiger and Scotty, but like those guys are anomalies, obviously. Yeah. Like,
and Tiger always fell back on a cut. He'd get nervous and hit some like low trap hold off. Like,
I think for amateurs, and especially for me, like I'm trying to get back to playing a cut, but my path is like right now it's just stuck at plus three with like a pretty neutral face. And then the tendency is the face gets a little closed. Like I rarely leave it open. So then like that three into out path with a one closed face is now a 15 yard draw. And I'm like, I don't like that.
Right. Or, but to me, like if you have a, like a short iron and you're, if you're, it's a right pin and like, I'm not going to just aim at it. Like I'm going to aim a hair left of it and kind of try to let it fall or like hit it straight. Like, I don't think, I don't know. I hated getting too neutral because I wouldn't know where to aim. Because I like, if I have a gap wedge in, I want to hit it close, but I'm not going to aim like dead at it and like, oh, maybe it'll fall this way or the other. I'm going to.
Yeah. See, that's why it's great to get your perspective, because like you played for so long. To your point, like when you're trying to go out there and you have to shoot in the 60s for it to be meaningful, that's a completely different strategy, right? Than like someone like myself who, you know, I'm trying to shoot around like an even par day. I'm like really happy. I shoot even par 4 out of 20 or 4 out of 18 round, like whatever the stats are, like as a scratch golfer, like, and that's not very often. That's like 20% of the time. Like if I'm playing twice a week, I'm lucky if I do it like once every couple weeks, you know? Yeah. And so like, I'm trying to play more towards, you know, just like hit the greens and like, I'm probably going to two putt from 20 feet. Most of the time.
I think it can be like for, I wouldn't say the average golfer, the lower handicap golfer, like it can be like semi-fluid. I mean, there's like the old saying, like play with the swing you showed up with on that day. And like, there's some days where it's like, I can't get the ball to turn over, or I can only hit it cut and like lean on it.
Yeah.
Instead of like just playing golf swing all day, that gets old. It's hard.
But how long does it take for you to realize that happens? Like until you realize, you know, is it three swings, four swings? Like, you know, I mean,
yeah.
Or is it like a whole nine and you go, all right, well, this is just what I got today. And then, you know, other people would say, well, like make an adjustment. Like, where's your ball position? Like is it a little back and that's why you're hitting draws today? Or you know what I mean?
I suppose that's like the beauty of like, if you're playing professionally, like you're definitely practicing the days leading up to it. And then you have a practice round.
So you kind of know.
And you also have a warm up for that day. So like you kind of know what's going on. Whereas like if you're playing twice a week, amateur golf, you don't necessarily get that.
No, you don't. I can speak from experience. you absolutely don't. So for you, obviously teaching, but you played a little bit or playing in the section as well, right?
Yeah, Minnesota section. I started the PGA process. I kind of took a little bit of a hiatus from playing after I retired.
Yeah. Hung it up.
I just needed a break.
Yeah.
And I think I'll get back into it more and start. I need to do some of my coursework and things, but I'd like to think that I'll get like the competitive itch again.
Yeah.
But I think I'll never have like the desire to like go like play again.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, because I wanted to ask about how this section works.
Yeah.
I'm historically known for like not understanding how like all the golf stuff works. And I still will sit on this hill of like, I think it's really, really complex and there's a lot of like nuance and stuff to it. And, but like for the Minnesota section or like the PGA, I would say most people that keep up with golf, like understand the Michael Block story is a really good example, right? Like PGA Pro, no different than, you know, McCain or you or like anybody that knows their PGA Pro, obviously an amazing golfer, you know, gets through stuff and like gets to play in the PGA and like is playing with Rory on Sunday a couple of years ago. Right. But like, if you bring that all the way back to where it starts, so does every state have their own, or like, how do the sections work? How do you get, you know, the PGA, you were just talking about like having status, like just kind of walk through how that works. Or like how would a Ross Miller or Andrew McCain end up playing like in the PGA? Like, how do you get there?
So you have to, to get in the PGA, I think you have to, you go through like coursework, and basically this makes sure that not just anyone can be in the golf business that doesn't know about golf.
Yeah. What is coursework?
So that could be, I think everyone has to have like a basic understanding of like a golf course operation. And then depending on which route, like you can be a general manager of a golf course like Derek Stendahl
yeah.
of Rush Creek and then be in the PGA.
Got it.
So he's not on the lesson tee, like giving lessons or in the pro shop necessarily, but he's still involved in the golf business.
Got it. Okay.
So like my route and Andrew's route is like, there's an option where like, hey, I'm going to go the instruction route where that's going to be like my focus. And so you do like all, you start it and you can play in like the local assistant stuff. And then there's like a national assistance, like through qualifying through points throughout the year.
Mm-hmm.
And then I believe you have to be class A, and then you can, maybe if you're class A, you can do the national assistance event. And then through that, I think you can qualify for the PGA. I think that's how it works.
Got it. So they just run like a, basically a tournament from, or tournaments, like a, kind of like how the US Open does qualifiers and you got to make it through exactly. the different, yeah, to get there.
So they take like the best, maybe it should be probably just not a bunch. Maybe it might be one. It could be like a couple
mm-hmm.
From each section that got go. It. And then I think some people are probably exempt through different things. Yeah. But that's how like a normal non-touring professional like can get their opportunity.
Yeah. Cause they're a pro, right? Like,
yeah. Like I'm still a pro.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so you can go, you got your pro status. How long would it take you to get your AM status back? What is it per it's something per year?
I don't know. I want to say, I actually don't know, but I feel like Donald Constable, I think it took him a little over a year.
He has his AM status back?
I think so.
That's scary. He's gonna be an amazing AM player. He's
so good. He was a big influence. Like how it hit, like that guy's mental game, like that was his thing.
Yeah. Will Leaf has said that his mental game is really good.
Yeah. Yeah. He's a cool dude.
Yeah. I've seen him at Empower a few times. Maybe I need to have him come on and talk mental game. He can give me a
he should.
A 101.
Yeah. He's got good insight.
Yeah, because his story was interesting, right? Wasn't he one of the last people to get his pro status through? What did he do?
He was the last year that qualifying went straight to the PGA Tour instead of, at the time, it would have been web.com.
Okay.
He was the last year, I think, he did that.
Wow.
Yeah.
And now he's going back to playing amateur golf.
That's what I thought I heard. I haven't like talked to him about it. But
can you imagine like me getting paired up with Donnie in a AMA?
I couldn't imagine being paired up with him in a pro event.
Well, yeah, there's that. Yeah. That's I joke all the time about how I think it's I wouldn't say like good or bad, and like I don't really necessarily have a good answer, but I do think like turning pro should mean something. And if you've played at that level, like something does just sit a little weird with me. Like when I look at the US AM team, it's like bunch of ex-pros, like I'm just, or you know, like guys that played at that level, and I go, it doesn't feel like amateur golf to me, you know.
Yeah.
Do you have thoughts on that?
I do. I think it like wildly depends on what is your post touring pro life look like. Like did you play professionally and then now you like kind of work, but all your work is like, oh, I play golf with clients and now you're an AM. Like you just golf all the time, or are you like really working and then like a couple times a year you play a tournament? There's a difference to me.
Yeah. That even to me, that gets a lot harder to,
it's a gray.
Yeah. It's so gray. I just, yeah. It's something just sits weird with me when I look at like the, you know, the AM, like, you know, leaderboards or tournaments or whatever. I'm like, this dude's like top 10 on the PGA Tour multiple times or, you know, something like that. It just feels weird.
So like, I don't care. Like, I don't think, like to me, I don't care if like Colton Ellis wants to play AM stuff. Like that guy is so far removed from like tour golf. But then if you took some guy that's like barely 30 that like just didn't quite make it on tour, but obviously you're nasty at golf at that point, I guess it's kind of weird.
It is, dude. Like and again, it's like most things in life, it's not black and white. Like there is a gray. It's just, you just wonder like how they can make it maybe a little bit better or change it. Like, yeah, I have nothing against, like, I think it'd be sweet to play with Donald Constable in like an amateur event. And I know he's an awesome guy. Like everybody says that, and I've met him once or twice. I also look at him, I go, dude, you played professionally for like how long? Like how are we playing in like the same stuff?
Yeah.
You know, and like how, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah,
and
again,
there's no good answer.
But then I look at a guy like, I don't know, like Sammy Schmitz was so good for so long, just playing AM golf. And I'm like, you're like basically a pro. Like,
yeah, so it can be the inverse too.
You're under par all the time, winning everything around here.
But like if you choose to not go pro and you're just nasty, like I think more people would side with that, right? Like,
yeah, that's
if
like,
LeBron
that's
like, decided not to play basketball, it's like, dude, you should absolutely go pro. But like, yeah, if you just want to, you know, slum around and play like street ball, like, cool, you can do that. But it's like once you turn pro, it's the going back. It's like you decide, you made that decision, you did that. You know, like if somebody goes to the NBA for a couple of years and the G League doesn't work out, they can't go like back and play their other 3 years of college eligibility.
That's true.
You know, that's kind of like how that's how I view it.
That's a good point.
That's how I view it. But then it's also really hard to say, well, amateur golf isn't college golf. You know, like technically I probably got a few years in college eligibility. Should I go try, you know, like what J.R. Smith did. And like J.R. Smith was taking somebody on, I think he played North Carolina. Or is that so where it was? Funny. You know, like he just went and played college golf. I'm like, what are we talking about?
And people love this game.
Yeah, they do. It's a crazy and it's an amazing game. It truly is. I'm obsessed with it. And Sydney has asked, and people ask, like, what, like, why do you like it so much? It's just like I'm a problem solver, and literally every problem is different. Like every time you go out and play, like, the course is different, the wind is different, like everything is different, and you're solving a problem every time. And then like even when you solve the problem and know exactly what to do, who knows what the outcome is going to be. And yeah, it's just like this series of problems to try and like make the best outcome.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up playing team sports and then like golf on the weekends. And then once I got like more into golf, I think it's because this is like actually me against me, and it is up to me like how I perform. And that was,
yeah,
I think that's why it's so intriguing, because it's as much as like you want to beat your buddies, like,
yeah, it's just you versus the course.
Like you've like beat your buddies, but still not been happy because maybe you played bad and they just played worse. But then there's, yeah, times where it's like, I actually played really good, but like Joe was awesome today.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know.
No, there's no sport like it, which I guess is why it's so great, and probably why you're super busy at Optimal, especially in, yeah, the winters coaching there. You guys probably got the best. It probably is the best short game area in the state, right?
I haven't seen anything like it.
It's so unique and so awesome.
Yeah, it's fun.
How long's the short game from like where you and I were chipping from there all the way to the back? How far is that? I
think it's probably like a good 40 yards.
It's 40. Yes, yeah, I was going to say 30. It's probably, yeah, I was going to say 30.
Yeah, you can probably
30 to 40 yards.
You probably wouldn't want to fly a ball more than like 30 yards, I guess.
Yeah, because those greens are also rolling at like a little 14.
They're a little firm and fast.
But 13 or 14.
It's pretty fun. I mean, we do like for like junior camps and stuff. It's pretty awesome. And then with like older kids. Yeah, because nowhere else can. Like I was talking to a girl that is in our older kid like accelerated class. And we were working on full swing stuff in the simulator. And she's like, oh, I'm going to play a tournament in Florida. I'm like, oh, well, we need to go chip because, like,
yeah,
have you ever played on Bermuda?
And yeah.
So luckily there's different spots where like the grain kind of gets different.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
Like that, it's so fun to me because like, okay, now I can like actually help you for what you have coming up instead of like us just working on your full swing all day.
Sure. Yeah, totally. And putting too. Like there's a lot of great hole locations out there. Yeah. I love going to see you guys. I'd probably go, I don't know, once every couple months. I probably should go a little bit more just to be able to work on chipping. Like,
yeah.
You can't do it anywhere else. And it's so hard to do something like here, like in my simulator set up, like it's chipping, but it's not really chipping, you know, like until, right, you're somewhere and you can like go to different pin locations and,
or even just
and
like
see different shots, like
pick out landing spots and like hit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You guys got a really good setup, man.
More people are like starting to like, I've noticed a few people, they come in and like bring their putter and their wedge, like grab a beer and they like hang out for an hour.
Yeah.
Like, that's cool.
Yeah. It's awesome. People can find you if they want for instruction or to just do like short game stuff. Is it just
optimalperformancegolf.com?
And it's only the one location, right?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah. So it should be pretty easy to find.
Yeah. In Maple Grove, right next to Osseo Junior Senior High.
Yeah. It's actually not that far from here. I think it's like 20 minutes from
it's
my
house.
It's
easy to get to. It's right off.
It's pretty centrally located.
It's right off 610, right off 81, 169. It's all right in between it all.
Yeah.
So
bunch of bays. You guys got good camera setups there. Yep. Cause I know you're a camera bays. Guy.
Yeah. I like video. Most people either they're a visual learner or like I need to see what's going on. So one way or another, I find it super beneficial.
Yeah. No, it's an awesome spot, man. People need to go check it out. Come find you. It's great. We finally did this.
Yeah.
Been talking about it for a couple of years.
I know.
So appreciate good. You making the trip out here.
Yeah. We'll have to do a group one and get.
Yeah. I just listened to you and Andrew talk forever about your section or your tournaments that you guys play together and the whole thing. It'd be great.
Yeah, we can get Andrew going.
Yeah, we'll get it set up. We'll do a little group pod one of these days. Yeah. Thanks for coming on, Ross. I appreciate it, man.
Thank you.
Thank you.